Welcome to Emerging Experts.
In this episode, we're joined by Peter Zhang, clinical resident and fellow at City of Hope. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Zhang. To start, where did you first get interested in the field of oncology?
I think I first got interested when I was like really young, which is like, you know, the stereotypical answer, but my parents were both in medicine, so they did some oncology research work at the bench side, and it got me interested in oncology. And then I think the second time was during med school. I actually worked with one of my mentors, Dr. Dorf, who's an amazing mentor during med school, and that kind of ignited that passion again, and that's kind of what drove me to apply for oncology. I think I've always been interested in oncology, and then in terms of kind of subspecializations, after working with Dr. Dorf, it really got me interested in GU oncology specifically. So that's kind of what got me to where I am now.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing. And are there any specific research or studies that you worked on with Dr. Dorf or during that specific time of your life that you'd like to share?
So I think the main one I remember, and it's funny because the first time I went to GU ASCO was in 2018, so 6 years ago, compared to the time I came this time. And basically, we worked on a project looking at immune-related adverse events in GU cancers with checkpoint inhibitors, and that's when I was kind of a little bit newer. And then we're kind of going through all of that, and that got me really interested in the field for GU and also immunotherapy as well.
That's great. Thank you for sharing. And what have been some of the biggest advancements in the GU space that have caught your eye?
So I think in terms of the biggest advancements, and it can kind of be like my takeaways from this year's GU ASCO, was that, you know, in the prostate cancer space, I thought the breakaway trial, the results from that were quite interesting. So they looked at the combination of abiraterone and olaparib, and it was found to be better than either abi or olaparib alone in ATM BRCA mutated patients. And the interesting thing was, you know, there was a small crossover, but the combination did better than the sequential therapy. And it kind of goes in line with the other studies, PROPEL, MAGNITUDE, TALAPRO-2, that maybe combining a PARP inhibitor with the AR inhibitor is the way to go for first-line metastatic castrate-resistant prostate cancer patients with homologous repair defects. Another thing too that was interesting was the CONTACT-02 trial. So they looked at the combination of cabozantinib, atezolizumab, and ended up being positive for PFS in terms of significance. They're still waiting on the OS data, but it was just interesting to see kind of the effect was more pronounced in patients with more poor prognosis, especially when they showed the graphic for the liver mets. You kind of saw a dramatic difference there. And then another study would be, there was a phase 1/2 trial of, it was HPN328. So it was like a DLL3 tri-specific T-cell engager for neuroendocrine prostate cancer patients. And that's kind of a space that we need more work in. It's a very aggressive subtype, and it had pretty good outcomes based on the preliminary evidence they had from their trial. So I'd be interested to see where that goes. And then for the bladder cancer side, the interesting thing was there was just more data from EV-302 with EV and Pembro, and really just across the board, it's just improving. It's has improved outcomes compared, you know, when you look at all the subsets, things like that. So I think it's just kind of solidifying that it's going to probably be the new standard of care for frontline unresectable or metastatic urothelial cancer. And then along the same lines, the UNITE investigators took a look at, you know, how do people do with EV after if they got platinum and then they got maintenance IO? And, you know, it does show that people do pretty well with EV afterwards, just to kind of give more evidence to, you know, even if someone gets, you know, platinum chemotherapy, then IO, they could still benefit from EV afterwards if they progress. And then there's the Ambassador trial was quite interesting as well. It met its endpoint of improved DFS with adjuvant Pembro after a resection. I don't think it met its other endpoint of OS, but along with CheckMate 274, may support kind of the use of adjuvant IO in high-risk patients after resection for bladder cancer. And then the last thing was the renal cell testicular cancer things. The long-term follow-up for CheckMate 214, which again, people seem to have durable responses when they do respond. And interestingly, they had more follow-up data for the good risk population. And we actually see a hazard ratio of 0.82 on that end. And then just the other long-term studies of CheckMate 9ER that just shows again that there's a continued benefit with that. And I think the big thing was they reported out KEYNOTE-564, which showed that there is an OS benefit with adjuvant pembrolizumab after nephrectomy, which I know kind of got a lot of attention as well. And then the other thing I'd like to highlight is Dr. Bergerot gave a great talk on kind of identifying and coming up with the better solutions for quality of life measures, just since a lot of the ones we use, they're kind of an era from an older age before all these new treatments. And we really have to start focusing more on quality of life, focusing on, patients now. We're starting to get better and better control of people's cancers, and we need to also start focusing on the quality of life, how they're able to tolerate those treatments. So I know that was quite a lot, but those were kind of the big things that I got from GU ASCO that I thought were interesting in the field now.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that and all of those great insights. And for young researchers, what would you say is the importance of meetings like GU ASCO?
I'd say they're very, very important. So I encourage people, especially for young investigators, if they have supportive mentors, to apply for abstracts, apply for these conferences, because I think they really kind of open up the world of, research to you, and also just to see what's out there. So, for example, I met a ton of great colleagues there, other fellows, postdoc fellows, residents, who, are doing amazing things that I would have never, never seen if I didn't go to that meeting, kind of talk to them at their poster or any sort of event beforehand. It's also interesting too to see kind of what's going on in the field. The field's going so rapidly, so going to those conferences in a way kind of keeps you up to date. And then the last thing again is not only do you meet other people in your similar shoes, but you also meet other great investigators, might meet people from industry, other institutions, and you learn a lot from them. Sometimes they might come to your poster, ask you a couple of questions, and maybe sometimes they might have an interesting collaboration that is similar to your work, and it's a way to kind of network as well. So I strongly urge people to apply for these conferences because it really does expand your horizons.
That's a great answer. Thank you so much. And now moving into your study, would you mind just giving a brief overview of this trial in metastatic renal cell carcinoma?
Yeah, of course. So basically, what we looked at in this trial is for metastatic RCC, there are a lot of new frontline treatments in terms of you can do IO therapy or IO TKI therapy. And there's kind of been a lot of discussions around which ones, whether we should do a dual IO approach first or whether we should do an IO TKI approach first. And there are kind of different discussions on that. And I think the trend now is, we're starting to focus on the biomarkers of response in RCC. And so Dr. Braun gave an amazing talk at GU ASCO, kind of going through all the different ways we can look at it through genomics, imaging, things like that. And kind of my project looked more on the imaging side. And basically, what we did is we worked together with a company called ImagineAb, and they have a technology where they have an 80-night zirconium radioisotope labeled Minibody that specifically targets CD8 positive T cells. And the reason why that's important is that we think those CD8 positive T cells do play a critical role in kind of the response when giving IO therapy. And we wanted to see whether that can help predict responses to IO therapy. And so what we did was that patients getting those upfront therapies, IO therapy, TKI IO therapy, they would get this special dye, and then they'd get a PET scan that can basically examine the dye to see where those CD8 T cells localize. And Dr. Powell, my mentor, who I worked with on the project at ASCO 2023, he kind of validated that technology, showing that in the PET scans where there were avid areas, this correlated on biopsy with CD8 T cell density. So what I did was I took it a different subset analysis of that same cohort in RCC, and whether, keep there are some people that at baseline might have a better response to IO therapy due to having a higher amount of CD8 T cells in their body for whatever reasons. So I looked at baseline lymph nodes in patients with RCC that were getting these treatments at baseline to see whether this could predict response to therapy. And what we showed was that actually the patients that generally had higher avidity in terms of their lymph nodes to correlate with more CD8 T cell density, they did have a significantly higher rates of response than those who had lower avidity. Again, it's a pretty small sample size. It was about 15 patients, and it's actually undergoing a larger phase two study right now, the iPredict study, to kind of validate these findings. But I think it's just encouraging to see that maybe there are these sorts of biomarkers of response to therapy. And kind of my hope is that this project is one way to, get a better understanding of what's going on so that we can translate that to a better clinical benefit for patients when we're deciding what therapy to pick.
That's wonderful and very, very interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
Of
And I
course.
guess in your clinical practice, how do you envision incorporating this technology into the management of patients considering immune checkpoint inhibitor therapy?
Yeah, of course. So again, the caveat is I'm still a first-year fellow, but I think where I see this potentially could be helpful is that, especially if we're deciding, and that's the hope with the future studies, is especially for renal cell carcinoma, we always wonder whether we should do upfront dual IO therapy or whether we should go with IO TKI therapy. And this technology could help in the sense that if someone has more avidity on this special PET scan indicating they have a higher density of CD8 T cells, maybe they would be someone that benefit more from a dual IO therapy. And so in a way, it kind of personalizes treatments to patients so that they get the maximal benefit of whatever treatment that they end up receiving.
Great. And are there any specific patient subgroups who might benefit most from this approach?
So I think in terms of the patients that benefit the most would be patients, I think, where we're not sure, kind of we're in a position where we're not sure whether to decide between an IO TKI and dual IO, since there are certain situations where you would favor one more than the other. But I think there are many times where, it's not unreasonable to pick one or the other one. And I think if we have a way to better identify the patients that will just have a much better response with a certain approach, this is where that technology could come in handy.
Makes sense. And then this study obviously focused on metastatic renal cell carcinoma, but do you see the potential for applying this approach to other cancer types?
Yeah, I definitely do. So one thing I'm really interested in is maybe applying this technology to prostate cancer, actually, since in the prostate cancer space, unfortunately, immunotherapy with these checkpoint inhibitors hasn't made as much of an impact as in RCC. We've done a lot of trials, and unfortunately, it hasn't really shown as much activity, minus the CONTACT-202 trial that reported out. But I think, we still have patients that, for whatever reason, when they get checkpoint inhibitors in prostate cancer, there's always that story of, one or two patients that got it and they've done exceptionally well, are still doing well. But overall, we still don't know who those patients are. And I think I'm hoping this technology could be one way we could apply it in the prostate cancer space to see whether we can better identify those patients and hopefully provide them these treatments that they could really benefit from.
Perfect. And what are the next steps for this research? And are there any future studies that needed to validate these findings?
So I think the next step really is going to be kind of applying this to a larger cohort of patients, which is already being done on, there's an ongoing phase two called the iPredict trial. And I think that'll be really important since we're seeing a signal here, but it is a smaller sample size. And I think if we put it to a bigger sample size and we still see that signal, I think it would kind of give it more legs as really a tool that we can maybe start using in the clinic for patients.
Definitely. And I guess just off of ethical considerations a little bit, the technology's still emerging, but are there any ethical considerations surrounding its use in clinical practice?
So I think in terms of ethical use, I don't imagine there would be. So of course, with any of these studies, we'd go through the proper channels, the IRB, things like that. And of course, too, anytime someone's on a trial, we'd give them an informed consent. We'd kind of talk to them all about what this technology means, the radio tracer dye that we use, any safety concerns there before they sign their consent if they wanted to proceed. But in terms of ethical concerns, I don't think there's necessarily kind of any different ethical concerns than if someone were to be on a clinical trial, since it is using PET imaging, which is something that we do very often for our patients. And the other thing too is that it's the dye. We've noticed that with the technology, the dye that we use, the mini body, it's generally well tolerated as well.
Perfect. And then what are your personal thoughts on the future of using this type of imaging with immune-targeted agents for guiding cancer treatment decisions?
So personally, I do think that this is definitely going to be one of the avenues I could see advancing very quickly. Personally, I think this is a technology that may hopefully, in the coming years, we can start seeing it translate into the clinic and start providing benefits to patients, since I think medicine as a whole, we're entering a field of more personalized medicine, and a treatment that works for one patient might not be the best treatment for another patient. And I think these kinds of technologies help address, everyone's very different, and we want to tailor treatments that would work best for you based on, the biology of, your body, your tumor that we can identify with these sorts of technologies.
Definitely. And just to kind of conclude, what advice would you have for other fellows or early oncologists, who want to know more about this research or just anything else?
Yeah, of course. I don't mind if anybody at any point, whoever it is, if they had questions about, fellowship or about this project, if they want to do collaborations, to reach out to me. My email is just pzang@coh.org. And then in terms of advice I had for them, I do think finding a really good mentor is extremely important. So I've been extremely blessed to work with Doctors Dorf, Dr. Powell, who have been absolutely amazing mentors. And I think it's important for early investigators, other fellows, even residents, to identify those kinds of mentors, because not only do they kind of help you get into the field and into the field of research, but they do help open a lot of doors for you, meeting others, doing collaborations, and kind of really helping develop your career forward. And so it can be hard sometimes. I still remember, I sent a lot of cold emails to people to see, whether they'd be interested in mentoring me. And I urge people, it can be hard, sometimes discouraging, but when you do find those great mentors, they make a huge impact.
Definitely. That's really great advice, and thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
For more updates on the latest news and trends in oncology, be sure to visit www.targetedonc.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. You can also find us across social media platforms. Follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Targeted Onc, and on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Targeted Oncology. See you next time.